Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Noya Caribbean Podcast. This podcast is dedicated to bringing to life Caribbean history and culture from our Indo-Caribbean experience, the lives of our indigenous people, the Arawak, Kalinago, Taino, and more, our African heritage, and of course, our gangster stories of resistance and rebellion in the Caribbean, throwing in the history of our music, food, and cultural practices. The more we know our history, the more we know ourselves. So get to know yourself through Know Your Caribbean, the Know Your Caribbean podcast. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of the Know Your Caribbean podcast. Get to sharing the lives and stories of our Caribbean people. And one of the things that people love about the platform with Know Your Caribbean is our gangster stories. So I thought it'd be important for us to kick off the podcast with some gangster stories. So today I'm bringing to you three gangster stories from three different Caribbean nations, but they do have one common thread, and it is that these gangsters are from Ghana. And I think many of us are very interested in understanding our African heritage and the stories of our African ancestors and the roles that they played outside of being, you know, just enslaved people, but the roles and the cultural practices, spiritual practices that they did whilst being in the Caribbean. So with our common thread of our Ghanaian gangster stories, I am accompanied today by Ni, who is from Ghana. So Ni, if you could shout out yourself.
Hi.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Ni, Ni Tete, which is my Ghanaian name from the Ga tribe. I'm a civil engineer. I'm into mental health. I'm starting a couple of businesses aimed at empowering our black people. Historically, we know the history, and the history has had a ripple effect. And I feel like it's time for a change.
Absolutely. So you grew up in Ghana, correct?
Yes, I did.
And you speak the language or several
languages? I speak Tree, I speak Ga.
Okay, so you are a proper son of the motherland.
You're damn right. Yes.
All right. So basically, we're going to kick off. Our first story is one of the first stories that I shared on Know Your Caribbean when I was just starting the journey of becoming a Caribbean historian. And I think with what many of us do is that sometimes we read these stories and we're horrified and we share some of the most horrific parts because that's the part that is most hurtful. And we want to kind of collectively feel this pain together. And then throughout the years, I started to understand how to shift how I tell my stories. At first, I was sharing very traumatic accounts. So, for example, we're talking about the story of Prince Class from Antigua. And basically in 1734 they had this rebellion in Antigua. Basically what the plot was, we're gonna blow up all the white people. They're having this governor's ball, and when all of them there dancing and drinking and getting drunk, we're gonna take this barrel of gunpowder that we took and just blow up the whole thing. Right, then for those who didn't come to the ball, they was like blow out conch shells, like fire one, two guns or cannons and thing as a signal. And anyone else or the other white people who left on the plantation, we kill them.
Right.
Bam. And we're going to take over the island. Antigua is going to be ours. Right. That's the plot. So what I'm going to do is before I get into the story, I'm just going to share how I shared the story first. And basically what happens is the plot does not go into fruition, right? And it is exposed, and Prince Class is executed in a very horrific way. He's been broken at the wheel. So those who are not familiar with the concept of being broken at the wheel is this big wheel, and you kind of spread eagle on this wheel, and they break each of your bones, starting from your fingers and going in until they break every single bone in your body. And it's supposed to be the most excruciatingly painful experience. And in between your bones being broken one by one, you're being whipped, sometimes you're being stabbed, a whole plethora of horrible things. So there is this drawing of Prince Class being broken at the wheel and also being whipped by another enslaved man.
Right.
So it's a very horrific image, and it's one of the first times I had seen something like that. And I shared it on the Caribbean, and there was a lot of focus on Prince Class's execution.
Right.
But there was not enough, on my end as well, enough focus on the things that was done before the horrific execution. So I'm going to read a bit of an excerpt. So for those who are interested in getting into history, you'll find these real stories in some of the most obscure places. So I found this in like the Pennsylvania Gazette, right, about this story in Antigua. So I'm just going to read some excerpts that really livened up my spirit when I found it again several years later after sharing the first time of Prince Class. Okay, so it goes like this. Now keep in mind, listeners, the language. Okay, so some of the language is very derogatory, some of the language it's gonna get you vexed, but bear with me. Okay, the name of the account is called A Full and Particular Account of the Late Horrid Negro Plot in Antigua. Okay, so the slaves had formed and resolved to execute a plot whereby all white inhabitants of the island were to be murdered and a new form of government to be established by the slaves amongst themselves, and they were to entirely possess the island. The slaves chiefly concerned in this conspiracy were those born upon the Gold Coast in Africa, which is Ghana. whom we style as Coromantes, and those born on the other of American sugar colonies, of whom we call Creoles. So that's another term. Creole at the time didn't mean someone who was of mixed race heritage, but you were born on the island, so you'd have a white Creole,
right?
Black Creole or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and the head of the former, the court Elias, was Taki, a Coromante Negro man slave belonging to some white man. Right. They're saying they had two chiefs. And one of the things that I love so much about this story is that who they call Prince Class, they say he was a king. Okay. So what they're saying is that it was commonly thought that he was of royal blood, and yet it was fully proved, and that he had for many years covertly assumed amongst his countrymen here the title of king, and had been addressed by them and treated as such. He appeared to us as artful and ambitious, very proud, and of few words, and was brought hither as a slave at about 10 years of age, and was executed at the age of 45. At the time of his execution, he endeavored to put on a port and mien. I'm like, what's port and mien, right? So apparently it means the demeanor and look on your face. So he put on the port and mien suitable to be asserted by the dignity of a king. So it's saying like, yo, his stature was like, you know, he's like, he's tall, he's proud, man of few words, and he's, you know, present himself like this king, but he was an enslaved man.
Yeah.
And this is very rare. You don't hear these kind of things about how enslaved are being described, right? Or how we see our ancestors. He had a brethren called Tomboy, right? So Tomboy was also very kindly used by his master, being admitted for his own advantage to take Negro apprentices and make all the profits he could of his own for his labor, right? So basically, they're saying that these two fellas, they were had a little side hustle where they were getting money. So, but then they also had his stature and bloody, bloody, blah, right? So they had some other brethren like Hercules, Jack, Darby, Ned, a few other different names. So it's a mixture of enslaved Creoles and enslaved African-born Africans. So they said they had the hands and courage for executing the deepest and most bloody crime, even that unparalleled hellish plot formed by them against His Majesty's government of this island and our lives and fortunes. None of them could justly complain of the hardships of slavery, their lives being as easy as those of our white tradesmen and overseers, and their manner of living much more plentiful than that of our common whites, who were looked upon them for their poverty and distress with contempt. So basically they're saying, yo, they were not even having life that hard. Like, why are they even trying to do this plot? Like, slavery wasn't even that bad.
Right.
And they were living better than some of the poorer white people on the island. So once again, they're kind of absolving themselves from the responsibility of their cruelty. Because they're like,
justifying it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they're saying that they were overseers, house servants, and so on, right? So moving forward, one of the things that they were saying that the chief measure used by the two heads to corrupt our slaves were the entertainments of dancing, gaming, and feasting, always colored with some innocent pretense as commemorating some deceased friend by throwing water on his grave or christening a house or the like, according to the Negro customs, where they were debauched with liquor and their minds embittered against their masters, against their condition of slavery, by the strong incentives thrown out against both, and freedom and possession of their masters' estates were to be the rewards of their treachery. So they're saying, yeah, like, they used to have these parties and things, used to have these gatherings, say, yeah, it's a funeral, yeah. But they were actually plotting. So that's what they used to do every, like, whenever they could, they used to gather together, sing and dance and drink rum and thing, and then but they'd be plotting and planning.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What the gangster thing that I loved about Prince Class, right, is that he did this war dance in front of everybody. So one day he had this costume made, which they describe is supposed to be royalty within the Coromante tradition and customs, right? So what they were saying is that he asked like an ex-enslaved to make like the big umbrella, because in Ghana the umbrella is like a signifier of prestige, right?
Yeah, especially within the Ashanti. So you see when generally chiefs of villages. It's part of sort of like the regalia, especially for special occasions. So they'd be carried by, you know, X amount of people. So you see them dancing and whatever they're being carried with. And then you have an umbrella, a massive umbrella,
right,
on top of that, yeah.
Right. So he was asking another enslaved man to make his umbrella. And the guy was like, nah, and I'm making it. Like, so. But he did have a shield, and he had like this hat with feathers. All right, so the description is that he came in and he did this war dance, and he did it in front of the white people too,
right?
Which I think is gangster, because he's like, he came there and he had like a shield, and like they're saying it was like a cutlass of some kind, and he had a hat with feathers, and I think some kind of cape, and then like his brethren were around him. Mm-hmm. But he did this dance, and a lot of the enslaved Creoles, so the ones born in Antigua in the Caribbean, they didn't understand the dance, right? But some of the other, who they call Coromanti, which are the ones who came from Ghana, understood what was going on. And like, yo, basically he did this war dance in front of like all the white people and the Creoles. So one of the issues about within slave rebellions in the Caribbean is that most of them were done by enslaved African-born Africans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those born in the Caribbean were born into slavery, so they didn't know life as an alternative, right?
Right, yeah.
So those coming in from Africa say, yo, what the hell is this? Yo, time for war, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even the African-born enslaved were distrustful. They were both distrustful of each other. So that's one of the kind of fractures that we have within our community, right?
Right.
So he did this war dance. He's like, yo, burn all of y'all, right? I'm declaring this war dance, and I'm doing it audaciously in front of y'all.
Right.
So yeah, I love that. So what happened, the reason why the plot didn't happen, is that they postponed the governor's ball.
Right.
Something happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody sold out somebody. And then there was this big execution where a lot of them were executed in the worst way possible,
right?
Obviously to send off a message,
yeah,
right?
So it's the case.
Yes. So, I mean, what the thing is that there are so many nuances within this story, because you're talking about the use of an Obeah man or wizard, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They're talking about that they did an oath where they got cock's blood,
mm-hmm.
rum, dirt from a grave,
mm-hmm.
some gunpowder, and they mix it together, and they had this kind of oath,
right,
of loyalty, that no matter what, like to the end, don't confess, don't sell out, don't, you showing loyalty to the king and to what they want to do.
Yeah.
So I really, really, really love that story, because it's like everyone just focuses on the breaking of the wheel, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Oh, that it didn't happen, but you know, they tried and they did audacious things. And one of the reasons why that the white people started to get a bit suspicious is that they were having all these gatherings. So they're saying they're hearing the conch shell blowing at all hours of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that's a call for a meeting.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And then there was one enslaved man that went to his master and said, yeah, man, your day going to come just now.
Mm-hmm.
So the master's like, wait, what do you mean? I mean, my day is going to come. So there was already some bubbling suspicion. You're like, yo,
right.
These enslaved, yo, they're hanging around a lot. In the middle of the night, we hear conch shell blowing. They want to throw a chat. They're starting to get rude.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, the snitch came and solidified everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that story, because I'm not focusing on the end. I'm focusing on the acts of bravery,
mm-hmm.
the audacity of how just doing this whole entire war dance in front of these white people, like, yo, the business.
Yeah.
You know, so I really, really loved that story. So in terms of war dances, do these things still happen in Ghana? As maybe not as in declaring war, but in terms of traditional dances?
Yeah, I mean, there's traditional dances based on occasions and festivals and celebration. All the different tribes have festivals within their calendar where the chief performs his dance, and you have dances associated with different tribes. So the Evers do their dance, the Gans do their dance, the Akans, the Ashantis, they do their dance. For example, I think the Evers have their Agbaja. It looks like a So to Chicken John's, which is quite interesting. So the more you look into the tribes, they all do different dances, and I'm sure across the African diaspora, you find that every tribe has their dance.
A specific dance with different meanings, yeah.
Dance with specific meanings. And yes, you might have dances associated with war, but they probably wouldn't be used because there is no war
right.
going on. You know, and you have things like African drums, which send messages. So back in the day,
mm-hmm.
you obviously there's no telephone. So, and if you went to send somebody to travel miles to send a message, you know, they have like the phantom from drums, which they beat, which sends a message to the village across.
Mm-hmm.
So once they beat, they know exactly what they're trying to say.
Right.
From miles across, because sound obviously travels that far. So you have dances associated with different tribes and
mm-hmm.
for different customs and events.
Right. So yeah, because the whole using the drum as a means to communicate is something that you know, enslaved Africans did in the Caribbean as well. That's one of the reasons why the drum was banned. Not just because it incited, they said, the spirit of rebellion, but it was a means of communication.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why the drum was banned. So I'm going to move on to another interesting story. And this comes from St. John in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Now, some people may not know that the Virgin Islands, a good section of the Virgin Islands was owned by Denmark.
Right.
So Denmark wasn't really big in the slave trading game in comparison to the rest of Europe, but they were doing their thing, and they were there from quite early. So they were around from 1658, 1659. So that's quite early. So St. John is quite a smaller island. It's 20 square miles. And it for the Virgin Islands is not very foresty. It has a certain type of, I guess, flora and fauna, but it's not rainforesty, right? It's like a coral island. So coral islands have a different kind of landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Denmark was doing their thing. They roughly transported about 1%, which is still about between 50,000 and 75,000 enslaved people. So because their thing was so small, they just had one main fort called Christiansborg. Does that still exist? Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't. I can't say I have.
They said, well, it's in Ghana. I mean, they used to change.
Oh, Christiansborg Castle, yes.
Yes, right. Yes. Okay, so that was Denmark's own.
Yeah.
Right?
Because I remember in school we had, you know, we went through all the forts and the castles. And whether they were from the British or the Danes and stuff like that, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was Denmark's own, right?
Mm.
So basically, what was going on at the time, in around the same time that Prince Klaas was doing his thing in Antigua, is that there was some war going on in West Africa, in Ghana. So they're saying that the Akwamu tribe, right, was fighting these people, the Akras.
They're fighting the Akras?
Yes.
Mm, I don't know what that means.
Right, so
Because Accra is the capital. It might be that because the tribes are also associated with the regions.
Exactly.
Right, so it might be that they were fighting the Ghans.
Right.
Because the Ghans are from Accra.
Right.
And the Ashantis, or the Akans, are from like Ashanti region.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you have the Evers from the Volta region. So the tribes are normally regional.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely understood. I mean, white people would just used to make up names. Or just, they were very lazy.
Yeah.
They were very lazy.
To date, they still are in terms of pronunciation of names.
Exactly.
Zero effort.
Within the description, because I was like, Accra, I've never heard of Accra tribe. I just know Accra as the capital of Ghana. So they were saying that the Akwamus and them were kind of fighting, and like the Akras were the main people who were providing enslaved to the Danes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically the Akwamu come and they were very heavy-handed, and they started to control the roadways into the interior where you'd go and get your enslaved cargo to bring across, right? So they were fighting, and basically the same people who were selling to the Danes ended up becoming captives, right? Then the whole Dahomies and them come through and like overpowered the Akwamus.
Mm-hmm.
And then around 1725, for a few years, it was the Akwamus who are now becoming the enslaved.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So a lot of chiefs and kings and nobility was sent to St. John for this specific period of time around 1725, 1730.
Yeah.
So anyway, a set of them came in 1733, and during this time, St. John was going through some shit, right? They had enough drought, people were starving, they had some worms in some of their things, and you had one, two hurricanes. Like, things were kind of fucked up in St. John at the time. And because, you know, it's a smaller island, they don't have like enough rivers and things, so it's much more difficult in order to cultivate. Okay.
Yeah.
So they cannot afford to have a drought. So they got there, and then a lot of the enslaved started to run away. So the governor starts this slave code. He's saying, yo, if y'all try and run, you're gonna get like a limb cut off or ear cut off. Mm-hmm. Or if you're rude, this is gonna happen to you, and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the different factors. Shit's fucked up. They don't have food. They don't have water. Obviously, the planters are getting vexed because they're not making money.
Right.
The enslaved are weak and fed up. Then you put in this slave code where you say you're gonna cut off my limb or flog me and stuff.
For some of the run away.
Yeah, so they started to run away. So what's happening is a bunch of people come from what they call them Minas. They say they come from Elmina Castle.
Yeah, Elmina Castle, yes.
Which is Ghana, mm-hmm. right? So they call them Elminas or Minas, right? So here's a bit of an excerpt from the slave code. So if a slave attempted to run away, the punishment was to have a leg amputated, or if forgiven by the master, be given 150 lashes and lose one ear. So yeah, I go cut off your leg, but I'll give you 150 lashes and cut your ear off. I forgive you.
Always have to leave a mark.
Yes, I forgive you though. So, when enslaved and were encountered by a European, they had to step aside and stand still with all subservience. Quote, unquote.
Wow.
Yes. If not, they were given a proper beating. If you could not go out past curfew and was punishable by whipping, dancing, feasts, or funeral rites involving the use of Negro instruments, aka the drum, as well as the practice of obia, was prohibited and would be punished once again by whipping. On top of that, there were a lot of very brutal slave owners who were Danish. This is something that people don't know much about Danish history, that some of them were actually quite violent. And, you know, tensions was high. All right. So basically, a set of these Akwamus come down to St. John. They're like, yo, burn all of this. So they kind of plotted this thing. So a bunch of fellas, I think it's about five of them, carried these bundles of wood, and they concealed these weapons in the wood. And they're like, yeah, man, we're bringing this set of wood to the fort, right? The fort have these soldiers sleeping and stuff, and they come and like they kill all of them, kill like seven of them. Only one survived because he was drunk underneath a bed. So he was able to see all this shit popping off, right?
Right.
So they kill them fellas by the fort, and then they fire a cannon, right? Firing a cannon is a cue for like the rest of their squad to go and kill their masters, right?
Right.
So one of the people who do that is a woman called Brefu. So Brefu is an Akwamu woman, and she and her Akwamu crew just go and kill a whole set of
masters
and their families and children.
Wow.
As well. There's no breaks.
You can't have your blood continuing, you know.
Well, yeah. So yeah, they didn't play. So yeah, one of them was a woman, Brefu, and they did save a doctor because they thought the doctor would be of good use and stuff. So what's happening in St. John is, whilst all this is happening, this one guy, Kwasi, right?
Kwasi.
Because they spelled it Q-U-A-S-E, laziness again.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Right? It's Kwasi. Kwasi's Ghanaian.
Kwasi's Ghanaian, born on Sunday.
Right, okay, there we go. So he goes to save his masters. He says, run, run, the Negroes are coming. Oh. There's always one, isn't there? Right?
Yeah.
So a bunch of them get saved and take boats. They go to St. Thomas, and the Akwamu take over for 9 months.
Right.
I think it's one of the longest rebellions in Caribbean history in terms of the fact that these Ghanaians took over St. John. So the Danes are like, yo, we need help. We can't deal with this. It's too much. Like, we're small. Like, we don't have, like, you know, enough resource. So
right.
They call into the French. For the French and the English, say, okay, help us, please help us get us back, St. John, they've killed us and stuff like that. So, but one of the issues is that the Akwamu wanted to enslave the others. So it wasn't a, oh, this is going to be a whole free black nation. Mm-hmm. The Akwamus, because they were such fervent slave traders,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they were very staunch on building their kingdom mm-hmm. back in Ghana, because they were warring with everyone else before, right?
Yeah.
And being very violent at home.
Back home, yeah.
A lot of the enslaved there didn't like the Akwamus.
Right.
We're like, we ain't trying to fuck with y'all because we know what y'all were like back there. So why are we trying to jam
gangsters.
Now? Right?
Yeah.
So their rebellion was not entirely supported by the other enslaved. There's a report that one of the Akwamu warriors had killed a set of enslaved from the Congo region
mm-hmm.
because they weren't trying to fuck with each other. So
he
killed them. There was a lot of internal fighting.
Internal fractures. Yes.
Right. So this is one of the things in terms of how tribalism
mm-hmm.
is a form of our own demise. And
yes,
how we have
to
look at the greater cause.
I guess you can somewhat understand it, because if you're willing to take whatever the slave master is saying, and I'm like, yo, we're not having this.
Exactly.
Right, and I'm from a tribe that is like, we do not submit.
Yes.
And you don't want to fight. When we win, well, you can't sit at the table.
Exactly.
You know, so.
Exactly. So these are the things, like, you know, it's very interesting. When we think about slavery, we just think it's black versus white.
No, it's not.
But it's we're much more complex than that.
I think it's very complex. I think there's a human element of it. It's
exactly.
just the human psychology of it. So you separate the race and you separate the tribe. It's dominant. You're always going to have some sort of hierarchy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, the thing is, in terms of that, you know, on African soil, mm-hmm. there was already mm-hmm. different tribes or kingdoms
yes.
fighting to have certain controls. And then this was exasperated by the Europeans saying, hey, I'll buy them for you. Yeah, them people annoying you. You want some guns?
Yeah.
Even the Danes, because the Danes were supporting the Accra people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Accra people say, yo, come and help us. Yo, like the Kwamus are fucking us up. And like the
yeah.
Danes are like, we're just gonna like, you know, I don't want to get involved though.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then they start buying the same people that they were buying from.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the same people that who was their like brethren. So mm-hmm. say uni are selling me and say people. And then one day they come and sell you to me. I'm like, hey, what's good? Get
you
on.
Ready to work?
So that's right. That's basically how they moved. It was all about, you know, profit and power. So yeah, what happened with this rebellion is that they started to get cornered because St. John is, you know, only 20 square miles. And they used to be monitoring the oceans to make sure they're not trying to escape by boat. Some did try and some did make it to St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
But what had happened is a small group was being cornered by the French and they decided to kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they found the bodies of 11. So 9 men, 2 women had killed themselves. They had shot themselves in the bush. And there was an 8-year-old boy named January who survived.
Right.
And he was stabbed by one of his own people because they're like, yo, we're
going together. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So he survived. And then he said that another group was going to go and commit mass suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And they carried him in a hammock for him to show them where they were going to be. And then they brought him into court and he was talking about the enslaved man who had killed the other Congolese people and that, you know, the plan to kind of take over and run the island and so on. And but then they said that in his court records, as one of the last things that he said, so that we believe that he did die from his injuries, the 8-year-old boy.
Yeah.
So, but what happened in the next upcoming days is that they kept finding other enslaved people. And then if they said, oh, you a Mina? Boom, straight execution one time. You're hung without a trial.
They can't afford for you guys to.
Yes. Like, retreat. We don't trust y'all.
Yeah.
Right? So, basically, they're freaking out. This one guy is like, God spare us from this sixth plague. Namely, the pestilence could come from the many murdered people and the Negroes shot down and left lying under the open sky in St. John unburied. He's like this very like...
extra.
Yes. Because you're afraid. They were afraid. They felt cornered. And, you know, there's a lot of violence happening at the time.
This is a Kwasia moment.
Could you explain to listeners what Kwasia means?
Kwasia means fool.
Okay.
Or Kwasia Sem means foolishness.
Yes.
So it's like, that's a very Kwasia moment. It's like, in that moment you say Kwasia, now you see.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You're scared. But they were very scared because there is a record here that this guy was like, yo, this overindulgence of kill devil. So kill devil is what he used to call rum.
Right.
Very unrefined. So it's like, oh, like this kill devil is very horrible to drink. And they said like 187 portions were drunk in a single day by the white soldiers because they were just stressed out as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they like, they brought back two kegs and they're like, you hoard it like gold because it's like, yo, because things are so peak. Like you cannot just be giving out rumps. That's like the level of stress that they were at. So
stress and heat.
Stress and heat and being surrounded by.
And no sun cream.
No sun And it's in their hot European that's another thing. So basically what happened is that they found a group of 24 of the warriors had engaged in a mass suicide ritual that included Brefu and some of the other Akwamu nobility. They were said to be noblemen and women from the Akwamu state. And that they, I'm not sure how exactly they had killed themselves. I think it might be a combination of using weapons and poison. The guy who Brefu had killed, his name was Kroya. Kroya and his wife, like basically Kroya was threatening to like amputate people and decapitate like his enslaved. He was a very violent man.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel nothing for him. The governor was like, yo, with surprise that one of the leaders of the rebellion, Brefu, whom none of us knew and whom we assumed to be a man for having murdered my son and his wife, is a woman. And then he's vexed when he finds out that she had killed herself because she got let off so easy.
Right.
But I mean, one of the things when I'm reading within African culture, they say that when you kill yourself, you're going back to your homeland.
Yes.
So I think they felt cornered and they're like, yo, you know what? Let's just do this thing together and let's just go back home.
Yeah, I think it's also coupled by the fact that if you're on a different island and you know the consequences of your actions.
Yeah.
And I'd rather die a quick death than let them put me on, say, that wheel.
Yes.
You know, it's like, what's the point? I might as well just see myself out.
Yeah,
especially
if
it's the underpinning belief is that I will go home anyway.
Yeah, because you're going home on your own terms.
Yeah,
you know. And I mean, the things, the Danes were preparing to do horrific things. They were already preparing gallows. They said you're buying like yards and yards of rope to like wrap up the rebels and pour tar over them and do a lot of horrific things. A lot of the rebels that were captured, there's an excerpt that says the Danes were like, yo, we made sure we made the biggest spectacle when dealing with these rebels because we can't make ourselves look weak in front of the French, right? So we had to try and exert, you know, try not to look weak. So some of the other names of the rebels, warriors, freedom fighters, our Prince Akwasi, am I saying it right?
Akwasi.
Right. You see, this they just butchering how they spell the names, right?
Yeah.
And King Bolombo and Kanta. So these are some of the names of the enslaved Akwamu from Ghana. So this is a different outcome to our first one, a prince class, but it's a lot of I thought it was very interesting as well because it's like looking at how, you know, the wars came across for the wars from Africa came across into the Caribbean as well. So that's our second story. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And we're going to conclude with our last gangster story after the break.
It's great.
Welcome to the Relatable Podcast, a safe space for open and honest conversations created for Black people.
This podcast explores how we relate to one another in our intimate connections, friendships, family, and everything in between. Hosted by three Caribbean women. I am Fiona, a single mom.
I'm Shaween, a very near empty nester.
And I'm Chantal, a free-spirited monogamist.
New episodes drop every Wednesday from June 9th, and you can find us wherever you get your podcast fix.
Relatable, because a shared journey brings hope.
So, welcome back. If you'd like to advertise with Know Your Caribbean, please do email us at knowyourcaribbean@gmail.com. We do have some great sponsorship packages for your Caribbean, Black, or person of color business. So do link up. Anyways, welcome back, Ni.
Hey.
And we are going to conclude with our final gangster story and our gangster Ghanaian story.
Okay.
And this is about Taki. Is Taki a Ghanaian name?
Techi. Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, because anyway, so I want another anglicized butchering of the African name.
I mean, they probably said, what's your name? And he's like, Techi. And they spelt it.
Taki.
Yeah, Taki.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So, Taki was a bad man who came from Ghana. Mm. Taki's history is that he was a slave trader as well in Ghana. Yes, he said that he had recalled selling his rivals, the Ashanti, the Nzima
tribe, yes.
Right, and the Ahanta. Mm-hmm. Right, so that was his enemy. So, he used to be selling them. And then there was a war, and then he got captured and then sent to Jamaica. So it's saying that Taki, so he was Fanti.
Yes, Fanti.
Right.
Fanti is actually, in my opinion, I'm sure in many Ghanaians' opinions, the sexiest Ghanaian language.
Why?
It's just the pronunciation and stuff. They have a lot of Z's. They sound, it just sounds poetic. It just, I don't know, it's just so smooth. Ga can be a very boop, boop, boop. It's like,
right.
Deal your thing, you know, and she is like Etisang, but Fanti is like Eseabazi. You
Ooh.
Know, it's poetic.
Oh.
My dad was half Fanti.
Right.
But I never really learned how to speak Fanti.
Because
my family's, my dad's half Fanti, half Ga, and my mom was Ga. So it's predominantly Ga in the household.
Okay.
I regret that because I could have wooed some people with that, I think. But anyway, that's a different story.
I think you're doing just fine.
All right, thank you.
So Taki was Fanti, and he also spoke very fluent English because he was trading with the British. So yeah. he learned the language. But there was a war happened, and just like what happened with the Akwamu, he got captured and he got sent to Jamaica. Mm-hmm. Now, Jamaica is... Well, was like the most important colony for England because it's as big as it's making enough money. And like, yeah, they have like hundreds of plantations. And, you know, if St. John is 20 square miles and they had 106 plantations, let's look at Jamaica, which is like way, 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 way bigger. Right?
Yeah.
You know, they had hundreds of thousands of enslaved on Jamaica. So anyway... Taki's there, he's doing his thing, like he's like a foreman, so he has quite high ranking. When you look at a lot of the revolts that happen across the Caribbean, it's normally slave drivers. Within slave rebellions, it's normally slave drivers or foremen because they have the ability to mobilize. They can go from plantation to plantation and therefore they can plan and plot the thing, right? And plus, you know, he had a set of confidence because of his history. He was not just a trader, but he used to engage in certain kind of military fighting and stuff back home. So he engages, he starts this rebellion in Jamaica that is one of the biggest rebellions that shape the landscape of Jamaica and the Caribbean because it was so expansive. So what had happened is that looking once again at the intricacies as to why some of these rebellions were not successful. I don't think saying not successful is a strong term. I think in terms of it didn't reach its full potential,
right,
is that the infighting between ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at Jamaica's history, they have the Maroons. So the Maroons are obviously self-liberated Africans who live in the bush doing their thing. They have their own community, their own everything, their own structure. But they had signed treaties with the British in 1739 because the British were just on their case. They kept fighting. So they're like, yo, hey, what? We leave y'all over there,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, if anything pop off, if there are any other rebellions, anyone running away, just catch them, bring them for us. We go give you some money and we'll leave you alone.
Yeah.
So the Maroons were like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
That's what happened. So with Taki's revolt, they said he was tall, statuesque, you know, commanding presence, a powerful man. He was a great orator. He was able to rival up the spirits of people when he spoke to them. And he was also accompanied by a very powerful Obia man.
Yeah.
So Obia was very important in Taki's revolt. So one of the things that they used to do, they, in the records, you're saying that they used to cover themselves in this powder that used to make them impervious to being hurt by the Europeans or the white man or whatever.
They still believe in stuff like that.
Right.
We still have that in Ghana today, especially up north.
Right.
Where, and it's, you know, so you find that a lot of people are skeptical about things like that. But if you leave, you see it for yourself.
Well,
and it's not what they show on TV. It's like, oh, go to the witch doctor. Oh, he said this is... With everything, you have quacks. The real witch doctors, they don't expose themselves like that.
Exactly. So, I mean, the thing is, I think most of us are not versed enough in Obia for us to really have a great proper understanding of what it means. We're taught to be afraid of it. But another episode that we will be covering.
True.
What happened is that the Maroons came down, like, yo, Taki and his regiments just killed, like, enough white people. I think 60 white people ended up dying. And they were freaking out, okay? The British and them were freaking out, like, yo, we need some help. So they called on the Maroons. The Maroons come down. They band together with the British. And they take Taki's Obia man.
Mm-hmm.
And they kill the Obia man in front of them in like the most horrific way.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, oh shit, like, yo, our powers are gone.
Yeah,
like,
because if the Obia man who's meant to protect us
is
gone, then we have no chance.
We have nothing. And
it has a psychological, you know, effect.
Exactly. So it defeated the morale of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, a few days later, Taki himself was also killed by a black man, a Maroon, a sharpshooter called Davy.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he killed Taki in the most glorious way because he used one of those muskets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were both running. And the fact that he could shoot Taki, like, you know, how you could shoot him whilst running, that's like some proper mastery sharpshooting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he beheaded Taki and presented his head to the British, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I mean, the story continues on, which I think is something that we can talk about on another day.
Yeah.
So we're going to close off today's session of Gangster Stories. But, you know, there's so much more. There's so much more information and nuances. And I think I will definitely be touching on, you know, especially Taki's revolt, because there's so much more to that. But I thought the three stories were very interesting in terms of ritual, Obia, the empowerment, and also the nuances and the many layers. And it wasn't just black versus white when it came to our resistance.
Yeah. But I also think the interesting thing is it's like you said initially when with the cloud story, when you first looked at it, you focused on how he died.
Yes.
I think as black people, the empowerment comes from knowing that our people in these situations did all they can. So we sort of owe it to them to be bold and, you know, daring and brave and persevering, because nothing we have today can compare to what they had to endure back then. So rather than use it as a means to say, oh, you know what, these people were brutal, look what they did, it's white people, this, that and the other, it's, for me, I would rather focus that energy and because it shows and proves how great I am, how powerful I am.
Absolutely.
So I'm so powerful that for generations, you haven't been able to make me extinct.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's where our power comes from. And once we start realizing that potential, you know, we're juggernauts, essentially. And that's my take on all those stories. We look at what they went through and we almost charge ourselves up.
Absolutely.
Using that, you know?
Absolutely. So, I think it's about finding the empowerment in those stories. I think we focus too much on, oh, it didn't work, it didn't happen, somebody sold out somebody. But I think I love looking at the details.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did that person say? What did they wear? What music did they play? What did they, you know, those little things, you know,
really empower me. Taking this shit.
Exactly.
You're not doing that.
Exactly.
You know, and we're not having that. And you can tell how scared they were.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say.
Until today, the psychology is different, because if somebody makes you believe you have no power for a long period of time, generationally, you become dormant.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And then you start believing that yourself.
Yes.
But it's like they can't have you rise or start rising and start knowing your true potential, you know. Otherwise, I don't know if you've seen this Netflix program called Umbrella Academy,
mm-hmm.
where one of them, they all have superpowers, but one of them has always been made to believe she didn't have any powers.
Yes,
and
yes.
She ends up being the strongest of them all.
Out of all of them. Once she realized her power.
Exactly. And that's what I believe us Black people are.
You know what? That is a great closer.
Yeah.
I think that's a great closer for us to look into and realizing our power.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, they had to resort to extreme violence, you know.
And psychology.
And still, we are still here.
Yeah.
And we are still so magical.
Amen.
So, thank you so much, Nid. Do you have any closing words? How about if you say something in Twi?
In Twi?
Yes.
I'm actually not Twi. I'm actually Ga.
Okay. I knew that.
And And I would say nyeye wala dong. That means thank you.
Oh, that's still beautiful.
Yeah, thank you for listening, and thank you for having me. Hopefully, we can have more conversations.
Absolutely. So yeah, I think this is about stepping into our own power, and recognizing our own power.
Yeah,
definitely, and looking at the power of our ancestors, that we were not just submissive, passive.
No,
and that we were actually.
We're becoming that, you know, and there's a risk of us losing our identity.
We won't do that. That's why we're here.
Of course. I mean, we're here for that reason. But, you know, you might be Black, but not Black.
Well, you know what? That's why Know Your Caribbean podcast is getting to know yourself through knowing your Caribbean. So thank you so much.
All right.
We'll see you for our next episode. We'll be learning more about ourselves, our history, and our culture. And thank you so much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.